Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Gail and I'm an alcoholic. I will be your host for the month of May. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms on aagrapevine.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you find a sponsor and help you learn the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. And today's Grapevine quote is from Spiritual Awakenings. I realize now that most of the problems in my life were a direct result of my attempts to handle my own life, to be in control of my own destiny. I am grateful that today, sober, I can still say my life has become unmanageable. And that's from 1982, College Park, Maryland. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you will find it on the Grapevine app every morning. An excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine, and I thought I'd read the first paragraph of our editor's welcome. In 1938, while writing the Big Book, our co-founder, Bill W., took a yellow pad and sat down in his Brooklyn home at 182 Clinton Street. The AA's 12 steps, as we know them today, were born. Since then, untold numbers of hopeless alcoholics have been transformed. The truth they contain has saved our lives, Bill said of the steps. They have opened the door to a new world. This month, members share powerful experiences about how these incredible steps have changed their lives. And I encourage you to read this month's issue of the Grapevine. And from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I would read a bit from how it works. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owners of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered it common, its common manifestations. So this will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees. So please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it's best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. And I'm so excited to introduce our first speaker, my dear friend Drew from my very own Area 79. Drew, over to you.
Thank you, Gail. Hey, everybody. I'm Drew. I'm an alcoholic. What an honor it is to be asked to share at this Grapevine meeting. Thank you so much, Gail. It's just great to be here. And Matt, sit back and relax. enjoy. I'm jealous. You get to speak second. Drew alcoholic, I said that. And right now, I also have the privilege and honor to serve my area as the BC UConn Panel 75 delegate. And I say that because that is not anything I thought possible for me when I got to AA. So I'm here to share my recovery story. I'm pretty nervous. I was nervous when they said this was recorded, but I wasn't nervous when I got to see Gail's face and Matt's face and Chris was here. So I guess what I'll say is I'm a real alcoholic. I love the effect that alcohol produces in my body. You know, I took my first drink at 13, and leading up to that first drink, I lived in a very chaotic home. My mom was doing her best to keep the home going. I was her third child, unbeknownst to me. I thought I was her second. Her first child was given away for adoption at the age of 15. Her second child was at the age of 16. And I came around at the age of 30. So by the time I was born, my mom had lived a life of chaos as well. She married an alcoholic and it was quite abusive. And my youngest brother, who was given away for adoption, I didn't meet him until I was 18. But the home that I lived in, my brother, who was 13 years older than me, by the time I was born, had started developing his own addiction with alcohol. And then eventually, as I was growing into my young years, he became quite addicted to drugs. And so his alcoholism and his drug addiction were the focus of my family, and I sort of was under the radar. And so when I decided to go out partying as a teenager, you know, I had been trying other things to make me feel less anxious in life, like all kinds of things that you do to numb out, whether it's TV, video games, sugar, you know, dating, all that stuff. By the time alcohol came around, I was at a festival and we had had older gentlemen go into the liquor store to buy us booze. And when we started drinking, we didn't know you're supposed to mix your black rum with anything. And we just passed it around in a circle and drank straight out of the bottle. And by the time I did that and woke up, I was in a blackout and I woke up in a very precarious place with precarious people. I wasn't harmed that I know of. And it was surprising to me. But it wasn't enough of a surprise or enough of a consequence to go, I'm not doing that again. Instead, it was like, whoa, I got a lot of attention. I didn't have to feel things. No one knew I was out drinking. No one was paying attention to what I was doing because I was the good kid. And I was off to the races. I couldn't wait to get blackout drunk again. And that's the cycle that was my drinking. I'd like to tell you I've lived three lives in my life so far. So I'm 48 years sober, 48 years old. I'm 18 years sober. My sobriety date is March 17th, 2008. So I got sober on St. Patty's Day. You're a real desperate alcoholic getting sober on the only drinking day that everybody gets to drink from the moment they wake up. So, you know, very desperate on that day. But I'm now sober longer than I drank from the age of 13 to 30. And I'd also like to tell you, I've sort of lived three lives in my life. One as a drunk woman, one as a sober woman, and one as a trans man. And I can tell you Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I've lived this brand new life. And it's not a life I would trade for anything, including another drink. And I'm grateful to be a sober alcoholic to say that. There's nothing today that is worth taking a drink over. I never, for the newcomer, I never, ever, ever, I hope if you're listening and you're newly sober, you know, it's as hard as it is to stay sober, it's easier to stay sober than it is to try and get sober again. Like, I never want to have to get sober again. Like, that was the hardest part, you know? By the time I got to AA, my drinking, as it says in the book, it got worse, never better. The binge drinking continued, the attention seeking in my drinking continued, and my denial got stronger as my drinking got worse. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody here, but I thought I had to be like my father, like my brother, where you're going in and out of institutions, you're maybe unhoused, you have no financial security, you've got no friends. Like I thought that was what an alcoholic was. And the examples in my life of what an alcoholic was wasn't what I was doing. I was going out living the life, in my corporate life as a sales director, like free open bars, party till the wee hours of the morning. But I wasn't hurting anybody, I thought, until I started all these affairs and my drinking. And then I was like, well, I'm just hurting myself, and these people are cooperating in the affair with me, so therefore I'm not responsible for any of the problems in their lives. I was stealing time from my employer on the phone, managing crisis after crisis that I created in my life through broken relationships and unmet commitments and broken promises. And I thought I wasn't as bad as. I'm not really that bad. And, I did come into contact with somebody who carried a message to me in high school, and that was my high school counselor. I'd spent quite a while in my high school years trying to figure out my sexuality, and I was scared to come out of the closet. And sexuality is different than gender identity, and I'm not going to get into all of that. But I will tell you that, in high school, my drinking really amped up. My grandmother died. We moved from Nova Scotia to Vancouver, and I just needed alcohol like I needed a best friend. It was just my comfort. And so my binge drinking in high school got really bad, and I went to see a counselor about all my other problems in school, and she carried the message to me, and she said, you might be alcoholic. You might want to check out Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I was like, what? No. Well, okay, I'm an alcoholic, quotation marks. And I told all my friends I'm an alcoholic. And then that spring break came, and they were like, what are you doing drinking? You're an alcoholic. And I was like, no. Like, that was just for a couple of weeks. Like, I'm good, I'm good. And off I went again. And so the seed was planted. And I think about cooperation with the professional community. And did somebody carry that message to that school counselor? Or was she somebody that was sober? Or did she know somebody that was sober? Either way, she carried a message to me. I didn't quit drinking then. It got worse, like I said. And through my corporate life, I was really rewarded for drinking, and I was distancing myself from my family. My brother had a couple of kids who my mom adopted when I was 8 years old, and it was really chaotic in my home. And those children ended up, my nephews ended up also becoming addicted to drugs and alcohol. And again, the fire was over there. And I was really resentful at my mom for taking care of them when they weren't well and ignoring me. And I was just drinking over all this stuff and being more and more distant from my family of origin. And my drinking was my focus. My party lifestyle was my focus. And I was quoting, I say lifestyle because that's what I would tell people. It's a lifestyle. I didn't see it as a dependency. And so the denial got stronger. I did end up going to counseling in my 20s about all of these problem people in my life and all of my anxiety. It's not me, it's them. And so I had a counselor for quite a long time who eventually said, you might have a problem. You might want to check out another 12-step program. And she referred me to a different 12-step program. And I went there. And through that 12-step program, the members there guided me into Alcoholics Anonymous because they too were going to AA. So when I got to AA, I remember that thing it says in the book about, going across the bridge from the shore of reason to faith, and arms being stretched out and welcome. And that was my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous in Vancouver. I was welcomed. I was terrified. My act of service back then was not giving you the finger when you came to say hi to me and give me a hug. Like, that was my act of service. Oh, I didn't blow up on you. It's like, but I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, no one forced my hand, And I'm in the front row with my hat over my eyes and my arms crossed, resentful at everybody for existing, and also equally resentful that they're not coming to talk to me. And then when they come to talk to me, I'm mad they're talking to me. Why are they paying so much? What do they want? That's the mindset of a newcomer. What do you want? I'm suspicious. What are you trying to convince me to do? I'm not going to do all the things you're doing because I'm not as sick as you. It's Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and I'm at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not as sick as anybody else. Like, insanity. denial was really, really a big thing for me. And I kept coming to AA because you kept welcoming me and you were smiling and telling stories. And that rule 62, not taking yourself so seriously, it was attractive. And drinking was still a solution, right? So I relapsed a lot. And there was at that time, there was a woman who I thought was bright and shiny and had a family and had everything that I wanted. At this point in my drinking, I had really been drinking through work events. I had multiple affairs. I wasn't able to get much sleep. I had an apartment that had like mustard and ketchup in the fridge. There were mice in my apartment and I didn't even notice, in and out of blackouts in different people's houses, cab rides, all that stuff. So my life was really unmanageable, but I was earning a good paycheck. And so when I was going to AA, it was that comparison thing. I'm looking for the differences. And it wasn't until my last relapse where I had a work trip at a ski resort with no cell phone coverage and I'm 4 months dry in Alcoholics Anonymous, which means I'm not drinking and I'm also not doing any of the spiritual work. I'm not joining. I'm not going to meetings early. I'm not taking a service position. I'm not doing step work. I'm not reading a book. I'm just dry. And I'm attending meetings and I'm leaving as soon as they're over. I'm at a ski resort and I organized it. It's remote. There's no cell phone coverage. I tell my sponsor I'm going. At this point, I'm calling her all the time with problems. I'm surprised I'm not fired. And what happened was there was a fridge full of beer and I had a head full of AA and I went into the bedroom and I looked at myself at this cabin and I said, okay, Drew, like one drink. That's it. I was just white knuckling it, And I went back out to the party in the living room and I cracked the beer and it was one drink. And then, as you know, it's like one drink's not enough. Thousands, not enough. I'm off to the races again. And I wake up the next morning in a hit of incomprehensible demoralization. How did this happen? As I was drinking and as I was talking to myself in the mirror, I knew I was lying to myself. I heard you guys. You guys were in my head. I just hadn't conceded to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. When I woke up the next morning, I called my then sponsor and said, look, like I've relapsed. And she said, of course, but that's what we do when we're not working a program. You're not going to get this thing unless you do this thing. Like, you're doing your program, come do our program. And then she asked me, like, what are you willing to do? And that was when I said anything. And that's when my life changed. That was my surrender. I'm one of those lucky alcoholics that didn't lose my life, my limbs, my family, all of my everything. I still had a career to go to if I wanted it. I didn't lose it all. And I say I'm lucky because I felt like I needed to do all of those things. And the elevator had to go down further in order for me to be a member at AA. And in AA, I'm a member if I say I'm a member. How well do I want to be in my life is up to me. Willingness and action will always see me through. Always, always, always. Doing contrary action is actually the best thing for me. I was taught in AA that if I don't want to do something that's suggested, it's probably the thing that's going to help me the most. And that still to this day is the thing I learn over and over again, So in working through that denial and finally surrendering, then the miracle of AA can happen in my life. Then I'm willing to go to a business meeting, participate in the group I belong to, give back. Then I'm willing to meet my sponsor as often as she asks me to, and I'm willing to read my book, and I'm willing to put pen to paper. And slowly and little by little, things start to change. And it's not overnight. It's not this like Amazon shopping cart of your life is now this magical fairy dust and you're a unicorn and all the things are great. No, it's trudging, it's walking with purpose. And so many people walking alongside, that home group where the heartbeat of AA is, like, that's where my we started in Alcoholics Anonymous, is in that home group. The membership that loved me when I was at my worst, like my absolute emotional worst. I had so much shame. I had family shame for my family life and all the chaos there. I was walking through things around my own identity I wasn't even aware of. And I had to walk through the chaos of my life that I created and the hurt I created and all the extramarital affairs and all the stuff I was doing. I wasn't married, but the people I was seeing were, and it was a lot of emotional chaos, right? And so that doesn't just stop when alcohol stops going in my body. And that emotional sobriety piece took a long time. You know, the steps really grounded me in who and what I am. And the purpose I have here is to help others to stay sober, my primary purpose. And when I started getting that, my life took off to another plane. You know, like I became a GSR, not because I wanted to, it's because I had a massive resentment, a massive, massive resentment at the guy that was doing it. He got into a fist fight at a business meeting. I was addicted to chaos at that point in my sobriety, and my higher power just knew, hey, make this really dramatic and this guy's going to want to get involved. And so I was addicted to the business meetings because I didn't know what was going to happen. And then I wanted to show everybody like, oh, that guy's a hot mess, like super judgy. That guy's a hot mess, but look what I can do. I'm going to show you how great I am. And I needed that. I needed to feel like I was in the middle of the group and that they would listen to my voice. And that's how my service journey started. And that was like 14 years ago, right? And I'm growing and learning every day. I'm not growing physically. I'm still a short guy, but I'm growing and learning every day. And so that past life of being a drunk and then being sober got me to this next part of my development, which is like, oh my God, like, why did anybody send me the memo? I'm trans. Like, I didn't know. And people thought I was hiding it. Like, I just didn't know. I did not know until I knew. And I think that's really God's will. It's like you Drew couldn't have handled all of that the moment you got sober. For whatever reason, you had way more work to do before 9 years sober, uncovering your true self. And walking through that path has been the most beautiful and one of the hardest things. You know, I like to think of my AA life and my service life too as sort of being in like a cocoon, you know, and the caterpillar goes in the cocoon and comes out a butterfly. Like I'm still learning how to fly with my butterfly wings. But I want to tell you that what Service and Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me and what the steps have done for me is that they've connected me to my higher power's purpose for me here. And it's also allowed me to walk through a lot of fear and see the love that's out there for me. I'm still walking through fear in my journey as a trans person. And just recently at the conference and recently before that and coming to a new community, I want to tell you that I left that career and started my own business. And that was a big leap of faith that I walked through. And when I transitioned, I thought my business is going to fail because my identity's changing to the outward facing public. And the only thing that happened was that my life got better and my business life got better because I'm not in anxiety about who I am anymore. Mostly, you know, my relationships with my family through the steps and through becoming my true self got stronger. My mother is the most amazing woman. Like she just loved me through everything. And when I told her, hey, mom, you know, like I need to tell you something. Like I know your whole life, you've known me as this entity, but this is my true entity. And this is my changing my name. I was scared to tell her I was going to change my name. And she said, oh, I knew when you were before you were born. I was surprised when you were born and they said, you're having a girl. I was like, no, I'm having a boy. And the name that I picked for myself, Drew, was the name that she had picked for me before I was born. And I did not know that until I came out to her. So Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to walk through fear, and fear robs me of the love that every person deserves in this world, you know? And you guys gave me that love when I was at my worst. And now I'm seeing how fear blocks and edges out God in my life with the people that have walked with me that, you know, sometimes I forget that, that higher power's got my back, you know, and I'm an alcoholic in that way. And I think the thing is I, through the steps and through prayer and meditation and through talking with good sponsorship and having this cocoon of people around me in service, like I've been able to change and grow through service work, through step work. And I am excited to see my life as I rotate on after delegate, who is the version of me that's living and being, that's grown and changed, that gets to go into the community and have all this spare time in my community, with my family, with my new friends here. That is like really exciting for me. Where else can I be of service outside of the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm just having the best time in the structure. I'm having so much fun. Oh my God. There's so many amazing people like Matt I get to meet, and Gail I've walked with for a long time because Gail was my delegate, you know, and I have a wonderful family life today. I'm married. I'm a homeowner. These are not things that are guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed. You don't necessarily get things that you didn't have before, but you get, for me, I get to have new experiences. So you know, being in a monogamous relationship and being with having my dogs as my kids and having a thriving business and having a home, like mowing my grass is like the most best way to have a step 11, mow your grass. You know, it's great. These are all new experiences in my life. So the intersection of service and recovery is really an interesting one. The more service I've done, the more kids I'm playing with in the sandbox. I got to work hard on my character defects. I have to remember to pause when agitated or doubtful, to ask for the right course and action. And when I first got into general service, it was all about listen to me. I want to tell you things. And what's really cool is like, I watch myself, especially at this year's conference and even at my own and my business meetings and stuff. It's like, what can I learn by listening to you? Do I need to say it now? Does it need to be said by me? You know, those kinds of questions are in my head now, and I get to just listen. And so that's my cue, I think, Gail, to be quiet, because I think it's Matt's turn to share on his journey of recovery. And if I haven't said this clearly enough, I am so grateful for my sober life. I am so grateful for the lives I get to come in contact with. And my hope is that by sharing my gender identity with you all, that there might be somebody out there that needs to hear that, you know, that we can thrive no matter who and what we are, we can thrive with the promo of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be of maximum service to my fellows is the beautiful bright spot in my life. So love you guys. And thanks for asking me to share.
Thank you so much, Drew. My God, I've known you for so long. And I think that's the first time I've heard all those details of your story. So thank you. Thank you for sharing all of that with us. And just before I turn to Matt, I have a couple of announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area, and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the app. You can subscribe to the magazine in print, online, or by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org or your local office. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms or on aagrapevine.org. I'd like to count how many times I've said aagrapevine.org. Check out our primary purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all episodes. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube as well. And now, I don't know Matt nearly as well as I know Drew, but I'm hoping I will after he shares with us. So take it away, Matt.
Thank you so much, Gail. My name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic and very grateful to be in AA today. And grateful to have this opportunity to share on the Grapevine meeting and share this meeting with Drew and Gail as the chairperson. I'm really excited. And I'll confess, when I got asked to share Experience, Strength, and Hope today, I do have an agenda that I'm pushing. You would know it right away. You'll hear it. So I'm just going to lead by telling you that I have one and telling you exactly what it is. When I was new to AA, people in AA had this way of impacting me in ways that I can't describe. where I knew that they weren't trying to be better than me. They weren't trying to talk down to me. They really understood and that they were just like me. And they made me so excited to be sober in AA. They made me really excited to think about the future of my life, because before I ever came to AA, I wasn't excited about the future. Maybe I was excited about a concert I was going to on Friday night or something next week, but thinking far into the future, there was nothing good that I was looking forward to. But I would hear people share their experience, strength, and hope, and all of a sudden I'd be excited about the future or encouraged to stay on the journey. So that's the agenda that I'm pushing. I am pushing one, and that's what it is. I'm not trying to convince anyone listening that I'm better than you, that I'm trying to get anything from you. I'm trying to convince you that I am just like you, that I'm exactly like you, that I know the pain you felt, that I've done work to get out of it, and that that's available to anybody. And that it's also not always a linear path. And sometimes the recovery journey has some bumps in the road to it. So I've been sober since before I was old enough to drink alcohol legally. However, I definitely earned my seat here. And I am absolutely an alcoholic, just like the other alcoholics that I've met in AA. And it took me a while to realize that. I thought my problem was a whole host of other things besides alcohol, and realizing my own alcoholism was not something that was immediately apparent to me. And there's one story that I'll tell you that I think sort of summarizes it fairly well. The first job that I ever had was a part-time job when I was in high school, and it was at a retirement home, fancy one with a fancy dining room. I worked in the dining room. I had a uniform. It was a vest, a tie, sort of a suit, but minus the jacket, slacks, specific shoes, and could never keep the uniform clean. It always had stains all over it. I worked in the dining room of this retirement home. I couldn't show up on time, couldn't show up at all sometimes, would show up not sober, would not do a good job. And shortly into this first part-time job that I've ever had, I'm sitting down meeting with human resources. And I think that that's a normal thing, that it's a normal part of jobs to just have meetings with human resources. First part-time job ever. And I'm sitting down, and this human resources professional is showing some care and concern. And instead of leading with a heavy hand, led with, "Hey, Matt, what's happening? What's going on? Is it school? Is everything okay at home? I mean, what's the issue here?" And for whatever reason, something in me decided to be somewhat honest as I could be at the time. And I told her my version of, "I've got some serious problems, and here's what I've got going on, and I'm wanting to make a change, and please give me a chance." And so I see her get up and walk into the other room with the dining room manager and the assistant dining room manager, and they close the door. And I like to joke that I can be prone to anxiety and paranoia more than most, but I know for a fact that they were definitely talking about me in that other room. That's what they were talking about. They walk in there and they're talking about me. And I just remember feeling so ashamed of where I was. And I left there with such a high resolve. And then shortly after that, I missed another shift at work. I got a call 30 minutes into the shift from the assistant dining room manager. I answer the call, he says, "Yeah, Matt, are you planning to come in today?" And I said, "Oh, I didn't know I was supposed to be working. I didn't know I was scheduled today." And he said, "Oh, okay. If you didn't know you were supposed to be here, no worries. Don't worry about coming in if you didn't know you were supposed to be here." So we get off the phone, and I'm realizing, okay, great, I have the day off. And shortly after that, maybe within a matter of days, It was one of those times that I was so drunk, so drunk. Because the thing about me is, when I would drink, I don't know if I'm stopping at midnight, 6 a.m., or next Wednesday. And when I would try to stop, I couldn't. I would try to stop for 30 days, and I'd make it three. And it's like, well, both numbers have three in it, so it's fine. And I just could not stop. And when I would drink, I would just drink and drink and drink, and I would drink more than I meant to drink. And even when I meant to drink a lot, I would still drink more than I meant to drink, even when I meant to drink a lot. And it was one of those nights, and I remember being on the phone with people. I was very, very drunk. I was smoking a cigarette. And the next thing I know, I wake up and my bed is on fire that I'm laying in. And the bedroom is catching on fire. And because I was so drunk, almost didn't think it was a big deal right away. And I was just thinking I would go back to sleep, and it's not that big of a deal, and it's just a small little fire. And for whatever reason, I came to my senses and got up and lost everything I had in that house fire. My bedroom burned. Other portions of the house were damaged. It was a very stressful and chaotic situation. And everything burned, including the work uniform. And the next time I was scheduled for a shift, I went into that job and I walk in and I'm thinking, there's just one problem. I don't have my work uniform. And I walk in and I go into the retirement home, and I go towards the dining room where I worked, and I see some coworkers nervously leave the room. And but you know, if I could get another uniform, I'm happy to work. And he said, Matt, you remember the call the other day when when I called you and I asked if you were coming in, and said you didn't know you were supposed to work? And I said, if you didn't know you were supposed to work, don't worry about coming in. I said, yeah. And he said, that was me firing you. I fired you. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. And then I remember coming to AA at a later time and thinking I couldn't connect with the big book. I couldn't connect with the chapter two employers because I hadn't had businesses or professional careers. But meanwhile, I was having meetings with human resources and my first part-time job ever, and then going back with the uniform problems that I had. And that's just one little story. And it was a really, really challenging, bleak existence where I had no hopes of ever turning 21, let alone 25, 30 or older. I had no aspirations to do anything at all. I was cycling in and out of psychiatric hospitals starting at the age of 12. I didn't get sent to rehabs. I got sent to psychiatric hospitals because I would just do outrageous things to try to show the world how much pain I was in. Outrageous things. And was constantly getting in school suspensions, out of school suspensions, in various treatment settings, intensive outpatient programs. And I remember waking up on one of those days after drinking all night long, a 30 pack of whatever it was, and drinking all 30 of them, all of them. And going to the bathroom many, many, many times over the course of that night. And then waking up, and the clock said 6 o'clock. And I had no idea if it was 6 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock at night. And it was such a beautiful sunny day out. But I hated the fact that it was a sunny day because it was so inconsistent with how I felt inside. And I wished it was a dreary, rainy day. And I crawl to the bathroom so nauseous, so sick of myself, so defeated. I look in the mirror in the bathroom I don't know what I look like. I never know what I'm going to look like when I look in this mirror. Did I get in a car accident, fall asleep at the wheel, and my face is all smashed up because that happened? Did I gain a bunch of weight or lose a bunch of weight, or was I disheveled, or what was I going to look like? I never knew what I was going to look like when I looked in the mirror. And having that high resolve again of I can never safely drink alcohol ever again for the rest of my life. Not once, not two times, not one drink, not a few. I cannot safely drink. There's nothing in me that believes I can safely drink. And then a few hours later, drinking again, still feeling sick from the last time I drank. And so I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous in that kind of condition as a senior in high school. Got a sobriety date at some point, got a sponsor at some point, not in that order, by the way. Got an open mind at some point. Don't know when that came. That was at some point in the order of operations. And within my first 30 days, I was brought to a Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous convention. And all of a sudden, I'm 5 hours away from where I live in a car with two people who were a little older than me, but they were young, sober people. And we went to this Young People in AA convention, and I spent the weekend with hundreds of young, sober people who showed this senior in high school that there was life after sobriety, that life could be okay, that maybe there were things that I could look forward to, that maybe I would turn 21. Maybe I wanted to turn 21 or 25 or 30 or more. Maybe I wanted to do things with my life. I felt that way that weekend. And it's awkward coming back to high school after a weekend like that and trying to explain to other high school students what it was you just experienced. Couldn't put it to words. But it really changed me. And I, you know, a young people's group started up, and I was going to meetings and doing step work with a sponsor, and not completely willing at first, and dragged my feet on writing a personal inventory for a while and sat on it for a bunch of months and would write a word a week, maybe, if that, at times. But plugging along, going to meetings, still struggling, still feeling cruddy, and doing the best I could, but getting a little bit more hope. There was a 24-hour coffee shop that was open near me. It was open 24 hours, 7 days a week. And you could go there at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday night, and there'd be some people from AA there. And it was just the coolest thing ever. And sometimes I was there at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday night, playing board games with some other young people in AA that just didn't know how to sleep yet. And it got me through, you know, and it was awesome. And I went to my senior prom sober. I needed help with that. I graduated high school sober. I needed help with that. I made an appointment to do that fifth step. That helped me write my personal inventory, having that deadline. I did that fifth step, and I had the most mind-blowing experience from going through the exercise of just telling somebody else the truth about me, the truth about my thoughts, my resentments, my fears, those embarrassing things that I thought about that I was too scared to tell anybody, the real motives for why I did certain things when I was thought I was doing the right thing, but really there was a motive behind it. Spending a day telling somebody all of that had such a freeing effect on me. And I remember getting sent home for an hour after that fifth step to spend an hour of quiet time to consider if I'd been thorough. And I didn't make it home. I pulled over and I fell out of the car door, and I laid on the grass and I looked up at the sky, and I just thought, what is happening to me? I feel this sense of freedom that I didn't even know was possible. And, you know, started making amends, started sponsoring other people, and continuing onward. And one thing that is part of my experience is, all that sounds really good, right? Guess what? I drank again. And at 2 years of sobriety, I was going to meetings, I was actively sponsored. I was sponsoring other people. I had a service position at the district. I wasn't living authentically. I was living a double life in sobriety. I wasn't staying completely current with step 10 and cleaning up, regular day-to-day personal inventory of secrets I was keeping with the way I was living. I lived in a mess, even though I was sober. I mean, dirty dishes all over the place, cigarette butts all over the floor. It was just a disaster. And meanwhile, I'm presenting my stage character to the world in a way that's just completely inconsistent with how I'm living when no one's looking. But if you had told me that I was going to drink a matter of hours before I drank, I would not have believed you. I wouldn't have believed that it was going to happen. And I remember drink in hand, drinks coming to my mouth in slow motion. And I'm saying, you don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. And then drinking it and just immediately having that experience of what did you just do? What did you just do? 2 years of sobriety out the window. Because I actually thought that the ego of a sobriety date was enough to keep me sober. It's not enough in my experience. I thought that that amazing fifth step experience I had a while earlier was enough to keep me sober forever. I need to be having those things with some regularity. And I ended up coming back to AA 5 days later. I was only out for 5 days. During those 5 days, members of Alcoholics Anonymous called me. They didn't treat me like I was a loser. They called, they left messages saying, Matt, we love you. We miss you. We hope you'll come back. And I came back. I heard one of those voicemails and I came back to AA. I was 20 years old and I've been sober ever since. And I'm 39 years old now. And the last 19 years have just been a complete waste of time. Just kidding. That's sarcasm in case you're a listener today. So, not a waste of time. So, what happened after that? Well, got very involved in service, more experiences with the step work and working the 12 steps and putting them into practice. Having some really, really vulnerable amends. I mean, I made amends to one person one time for some behavior. They didn't know what I was talking about. And they asked me, hey, Matt, do you remember that you went around telling everybody in high school that you were abducted at one point? Did that actually happen? And I lied and said, yes, that did happen. And I actually had to go back and make another amends year later and being like, remember when I made amends? And then I opened the door for, if there was anything you wanted to say. And you said, we're fine with that, but I just have one question for you. Did that thing actually happen? And I lied. And I said, yeah, that happened. I had to go back years later and make that amends again. And that was the real amends. She was so generous. She said, Matt, if you felt like you needed to go around telling people that that happened, then as far as I'm concerned, that did happen to you. Some amends are generous like that, others not so much. Sometimes an amends makes me realize, man, I really hurt people. I had lied to my mom about getting bullied for something that I didn't actually get bullied for, and she thought it was her fault. And I remember the freedom of telling her that I had lied and that I actually that act didn't actually happen that way. And on the other hand, sometimes the universe throws me a bone and it's a different kind of awareness. It's not the hey, you really hurt people. It's the hey, kid, you're doing the right thing. In sobriety, I started one career. I went to college sober. I got a master's degree sober. I worked in a professional job for a while sober. I wanted to switch. Then I went to law school sober, became an attorney. I was quivering at the swearing in ceremony. Couldn't believe I'd made it. I met my wife in sobriety. I included her in my sobriety. She met my sponsees. I brought her with me to open meetings. She'd never known me before I was sober. I was 6 years sober when she met. She became interested in Al-Anon because she found what we had here really attractive. She really wanted it and she wanted a program for herself. And that's a really awesome thing. And sometimes the universe does show me, wow, take a look around. And all of our transformation stories might be different. Maybe you don't have the marriage, maybe you don't have the two different careers, but I've known enough people in AA, I've sponsored enough people. There's always a transformation story, and it's always powerful, and it's all of ours, whatever it might be. I'm just telling you mine. I remember waking up after having to have surgery at one point. I had to have part of my colon removed, and I was in the best shape of my life. I was sober over 10 years. I was frustrated about it. But when I woke up from that, I turned on my phone and I had text message and voicemail galore. And that just showed me, wow, I'm doing the right thing. I'll end with this. The other day I was at a meeting. And I left the meeting and I was driving and I pulled up to a stoplight and a lady pulled up in a stoplight next to me in a SUV. And she turns to me and she just waves. And I turned to her and I just waved back. And then all of a sudden she holds up a little baby kitten and shows it to me, complete stranger. And I just react and go, wow, that's amazing. I attract those kinds of scenarios today. That's the kind of thing that happens, that somebody who's a stranger pulls up next to me at a stoplight, wants to wave at me, wants to hold up a kitten to show me. I cannot overstate the change that's happened to me since I came to AA. People in AA were scared of me when I was new. I was rugged. It wasn't pretty. I was over 100 pounds heavier than I am now. I didn't know how to communicate effectively, couldn't hold a job, couldn't do anything. And look at what's happened. I hope I've accomplished my agenda. If you're new, whether it's 55 days, 24 hours, any amount of time, early in your journey, I hope I've inspired you that this thing works. And if you're not new in your journey and you're just having a bad day, I have bad days all the time. The highs are high and the lows are low, but man, in the aggregate, it's all worth it. It's awesome to be here with Gail and Drew. Great to hear Drew. And appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Matt. Wow, you did a brilliant job of describing the horrors of alcoholism and the joy and hopefulness of recovery. So thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you both. Please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. And now I would like to invite Drew to close the meeting with a prayer of his choice.
Thank you, Gail. Since it's dealer's choice, I'm gonna do the step seven prayer, which is on page 76 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. My creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go from here to do your bidding.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you, Chris, for giving me this opportunity and the autonomy to invite people I love to this meeting. Thank you.